Blog Talk Radio.
Got an awesome Friday show for you. So some of Donald Trump's phone calls with other world leaders leaked. He's such a bitch, man. I'm going to give you some of the details of his call with the Mexican president. And then also, later on in the show, Eric Bolling defends President Trump's record in the worst way possible. We have Jim Justice, Democratic governor, made an interesting announcement the other day. We'll cover that. Got a little bit of video there for you. And a new poll on what percentage of the American people want to legalize marijuana and what percentage like our laws as they currently are. And, woof, hot diggity damn, is there a story there? Okay, so without further ado, let's get started. We'll jump right into it, and we'll go to the leaks, which the White House are calling treasonous. All right, here we go. Some of President Trump's phone calls with various world leaders leaked, and we have a curious back and forth here with the Mexican president. President Donald Trump, in a January 27th phone call, repeatedly asked his Mexican counterpart, Enrique Peña Nieto, to stop publicly refusing to pay for the border wall that was a central Trump campaign promise, according to a transcript published by the Washington Post. Trump described his signature campaign issue as the least important thing we are talking about. Wow, while adding, politically, it might be the most important. The U.S. president said Peña Nieto's refusal to pay for the wall had left the White House boxed in politically. When asked by the press about the issue, Trump said both of them should deflect. Quote, so what I would like to recommend is, if we're going to have continued dialogue, we will work out the wall, Trump said. They're going to say, who's going to pay for the wall, Mr. President, to both of us, and we should both say, we will work it out. It will work out in the formula somehow, as opposed to saying, we will not pay, and me saying, we will not pay. Peña Nieto agreed that talking about the wall was unproductive. Quote, this is what I suggest, Mr. President, Peña Nieto said. Let us stop talking about the wall. I have recognized the right of any government to protect its borders as it deems necessary and convenient, but my position has been and will continue to be very firm, saying that Mexico cannot pay for that wall. But you cannot say that to the press, Trump shot back. The press is going to go with that, and I cannot live with that. You cannot say that to the press because I cannot negotiate under those circumstances. Okay, so this is hilarious for a variety of reasons. The most important one being he's begging. He's begging the Mexican president. Now, this is the guy who ran his, yeah, here I am, macho man, tough guy. I'm going to take on world leaders. You know, I'm rough around the edges. I'm like a regular person. Hey, let me tell you the way it's supposed to go. I'm the guy. Trump's the guy. Remember, he's in The Apprentice. He says, you're fired. I say, you're fired. I'm the boss. I'm the big boss man here. Yeah, that's what I am. Big boss man, like WWE. Trump was in WWE, too. But then in real life, behind the scenes, he's like, okay, well, step aside, guys. Just get the cameras out of the room. Here, I'm going to have a serious policy talk here with my Mexican counterpart, and we're gonna work some things out. They're gonna pay for that wall, believe me. And then they get behind closed doors, and Trump's like, look, we have to make some sort of a deal. I just want you to not say anymore that you're not gonna pay for it because I said that you're gonna pay for it, and I guess. What a bitch! What a little his weight, but behind closed doors, he's like, look, please. I'll give you a hand job behind a dumpster at an Arby's, please. Please. It's funny. But the other part that, I mean, this really should get under the skin of the people who voted for Trump based on this reason, because he said it is, quote, the least important thing we are talking about. But politically, it might be the most important. So do you understand that? The least important thing that we're talking about. Damn, man. Damn, that's a slap across the face to every single person who would go to those rallies and be like, what are we going to do? Build a wall! Who's going to pay for it? Mexico! Yeah! The wall's the best thing ever! It's so important! Oh my God! President Trump will never let us down! And then he gets behind the scenes, he's like, look, this is totally irrelevant, like a wall, whatever, who gives a shit? It's the least important thing we're going to talk about? Man, it shows you, though. Like, I think a lot of people thought, maybe including myself at times, that Trump is too stupid to even, like, strategize. And that when he says certain things, like he'll stumble upon the right strategy in some instances. In other instances, he stumbles on sounding like the biggest fucking idiot in the world, because he also is pretty dumb. But this is him saying, like, directly to the president of Mexico, okay, look, dude, here's what we're going to do. We're going to deflect. That's what we're going to do. They're going to ask you questions about this, and you're going to be like Neo from The Matrix. loser, man. What a loser. So, anyway, if you voted for him because you thought he cares so much about that wall, he's going to get that wall built. You know what's going to happen? Mexico is going to pay for it. That's what's going to happen. If that's what you thought, you're a sucker. You've been played. You're a chump. He doesn't mean anything he says, man. This is a guy who only cares about self-aggrandizement. He only cares about narcissism, his ego. He says anything that suits his own purposes. He has no core. He has no fundamental beliefs. And clearly the wall is one of the things he personally files under the whatever category. But it was something that he knew he could shore up his base by using it. And he was able to feel out what the proper thing to say is to weave his way to build a winning coalition. And half the stuff was bigoted. You know, do nationwide stop and frisk. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do nationwide stop and frisk, and we're going to ban all Muslims. We're going to ban all Muslims from coming into the country. It'll be tremendous, believe me. And we're going to build that wall. And the immigrants that come in, they're rapists, they're criminals. I assume some are good people. So that stuff shored up the base, and then you got more crossover voters, the so-called Reagan Democrats, or the people who are disaffected in the Rust Belt, who his populism, economic populism, worked for them. Cobbled together this coalition, won, but this is what really goes on, man, in his mind and behind the scenes. I mean, you can't expect anything that this guy says to be solid, because just to give one more example, he railed against Hillary Clinton and Ted Cruz for their Wall Street connections, and specifically for Goldman Sachs connections. And then Trump appoints like all of Goldman Sachs when he gets in office. His entire cabinet, he's like, shit, we only have 97 people from Goldman Sachs. Can we get a 98th? Can we get a 98th? All right, we got the president from Goldman Sachs. We got other high-level officials from Goldman Sachs. Come on, can we get more Goldman Sachs? So if somebody's willing to do a 180 like that, I mean, with his trade policy, made in America is what you got to do. Anyway, let me outsource more of my jobs. He has 12 countries he has his products made in. So anybody who's willing to do that much of a 180, yeah, he's going to do shit like this behind the scenes. This is really isn't important. Who gives a shit about a wall? But anyway, please don't talk about it anymore. And then what's he going to do at the next rally he goes to? We're going to build that wall, and who's going to pay for it? Mexico! He's lying to you. You've been had. You've been took. Okay. So there we have it, motherfuckers. We are off and running. Off and running. All right, now we're going to go to Trump surrogates and how they have absolutely nothing of substance to say. So let me pull this up for you. Okay, here we go. Trump has a surrogate named Seb Gorka. Now, this guy is, man, is he a character. So he used to be part of like a neo-Nazi group when he was a kid. And I say kid. Kid is not really the right word. When he was just younger. So super questionable. He was kind of big in the news a few months ago because of his unsavory connections and his fawning adoration and love for Trump. Well, anyway, this guy went on Fox News to defend his daddy, and he made a curious argument about how Trump can best affect North Korea policy.
China. This is a newspaper. The China Daily said this. Trump is wrong, it says, in his assumption that Beijing can single-handedly handle the matter with regard to North Korea. As Beijing has said repeatedly, does not have the kind of control over Pyongyang that the U.S. president believes it does. What card left do you have to get China to act?
We have, you know, the president's Twitter feed. We have the most powerful man in the world making it very clear that we came out of the Mar-a-Lago summit with very high hopes. Let's look at the facts. Forget op-ed pieces in newspapers across the globe. China controls more than 80% of the imports into North Korea. That is a massive point of leverage. China has wanted a buffer state since 1950. We understand it. But at some point, a buffer state that destabilizes the region isn't good for Beijing either. So the president has made it clear he is not satisfied. He is disappointed with what Beijing has done since Mar-a-Lago, and he wishes to see them step up to the plate.
With all due respect, can a Twitter feed change the mind of those leading China?
If you can win a U.S. election with it, I think it's pretty powerful, Bill, don't you?
No. We shall see.
Damn, son. You even made the Fox News host question your ass. That's not why the Fox News hosts are there. They're there to go, just lob that softball right down the middle. But your point was so bad that even the Fox News host was like, shit, I'm going to have to push back a little bit because that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. So what tools do we have now at this point to affect China policy towards North Korea and North Korea itself? Well, you know, we have the president's Twitter feed. What? What? Oh, my God, he really thinks that's a good point. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now, on, believe it or not, on some issues, it's not the craziest thing in the world to point out that the Twitter feed might have some effect. So, for example, domestic policy. Domestic policy, it has a lot more effect. For example, if he wants to put pressure on other Republicans, Republicans can get scared because they can think, shit, I have a huge following of Trump voters and supporters in my state, and if I don't vote with the president on this issue or that issue, oh my God, this is going to be horrible for me politically, so I'm kind of forced, my arms twisted, I got to vote with the president on this issue, even though I might not want to. So for domestic policy, I do think that actually has some sway. For foreign policy, only bad can come from Trump trying to throw weight around on Twitter. Because they're not under any obligation to you, and you don't have a big, you know, fan base in China that's gonna prod their government to do one thing or the other thing. Not that the Chinese government would listen to their people anyway. But all that's gonna happen is you're prodding people, you're poking them with a stick. So we saw this, you know, recently with North Korea. I mean, he's over there literally threatening military action on Twitter against an unstable boy dictator in North Korea. Like, okay, those actions have consequences in the real world, and it's only negative consequences. And this idea of like, you know, well, they're the problem. They are being totally offensive here in North Korea, so that's why we got to make sure we got to stop them from getting their weapons. But hold on. Gaddafi saw what we did with Saddam. We said about Saddam, hey, you have weapons of mass destruction. You got to get, you know, we're going to come get them. And then we waged a war. So Gaddafi was like, shit, I don't want that happening to me. Here, take my weapons of mass destruction. And the U.S. went in there and toppled them anyway. So the lesson that world leaders take away from that is do not trust these motherfuckers. If they want to make a deal, if they want you to give up your weapons, don't do it. The only way to have a real deterrent is to have those weapons. So now he's doing missile tests out the wazoo, and he's talking about how, oh, yeah, I could take out Alaska or California or wherever. And the U.S. is acting like, oh, shit, he's going to do an offensive attack on us. He's not. His country is a gnat. They have a military budget of about 37 cents and a Pop-Tart. That's not. They're not a threat. We have the world's most powerful military ever. They can't even feed their people. They can't even get the fucking plumbing to work. They don't. Their electricity, their electric grid is way inferior. Have you ever seen the pictures at night of North Korea versus South Korea? North Korea is like stuck in the year 1712. So they're not a threat. They're doing all this stuff because they're scared the U.S. is going to go in there and topple them. So it's self-preservation that they're like, see, we're flexing over here. You see, we got weapons. Don't, please don't attack. And by the way, if you do offensively attack them, what are they going to do? They're going to immediately attack Seoul, South Korea, and you're going to have thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people die. Is that the path you want to go? Well, according to President Numbnuts, when he goes on Twitter and starts threatening, maybe we do regime change. Could you imagine another country, their world leader, going on Twitter and threatening regime change against the U.S.? How would that go over? We would say that's a direct threat of violence, and they're looking like they're going to wage an offensive attack, so we can counterattack and be defensive, and we go to war. But when we do it to them, what? We expect, oh, they're just supposed to sit there and take it. Yeah, China's supposed to fix this whole thing. Yeah, North Korea's not acting right. We don't like the way that they're acting. I mean, we act like the fucking schoolyard bully on the world stage because we are. That's not to say that what's happening in North Korea is good. No, of course not. He's a man-baby dictator. The country's stuck way back in time. It's a hostage crisis. I feel bad for everybody in North Korea going through what they're going through, but there are no good answers from the outside. You can't just, whoop, there we go, we toppled them, and nobody died, and now they're going to be a democracy, and that's not going to fucking happen. But Trump surrogates are so stupid. They go out on talk shows, and they go, well, yeah, what he should do, he's going to really affect this if he tweets more. This is the level of seriousness that we're dealing with. This is their intellectual capacity.
You know, the president, he should, like, tweet more, and that'll solve it. Yeah, that'll solve it.
Ineffectual, childish, dangerous. That's what these people are. Okay. All right, now, let's go to Eric Bolling.
Fox News host Eric Bolling defended President Trump's record, but he did it in the dumbest way imaginable here by making a series of claims that are just 100% incorrect. So let's watch, and then we'll have a field day breaking it down.
Time to wake up America. A tale of two presidencies. On one hand, Donald Trump is a popular president with real Americans, the heartland. Tonight, the president will head to West Virginia for a rally. Look at that. Look at all those people. Look at the people already waiting there for the president. They lined up last night just to see him. Now, you've heard it from me 1,000 times. Stop listening to the polls, stop listening to the media, and stop listening to the anti-Trumpers. Listen to the people. Now to the other presidency. The coastal elites, along with the mainstream media, are constantly trying to derail the president on all fronts. But when grading a presidency, the two most important factors are clearly the economy and national security. President Obama presided over 8 years of economic malaise. President Obama presided over the massive expansion of ISIS terror and homeland terror. President Obama presided over volatile civil unrest in our communities. President Obama was a failed presidency. President Trump, however, has a robust economy. ISIS is just about defeated. The Supreme Court is intact and conservative, And by the way, have you heard of any race riots in Ferguson or Baltimore recently? So you decide which matters most, your economic well-being and your security, or a conversation with a Mexican president. Bottom line, Trump has fixed most of the Obama failures, and I'd call that a successful first 6 months.
Imagine being that stupid. Eric Bolling is such a fucking simpleton, it's unbelievable. I mean, that is rank partisan hypocrisy. So, look, if Obama did something that I thought was bad, I would call it out and be like, that's bad and that's stupid and you shouldn't do it. I mean, his war on whistleblowers, just to give one example, his drone war, which killed 90% the wrong people. You know, there are things Obama did where we go, whoa, what the fuck are you doing? Because I do my best to be intellectually honest about these things, and I try to stick more to principles over politicians. So I'm not just playing with it for a team. I'm pointing out, hey, that's fucked up. Okay, you get credit for that thing. And this cuts in every direction. If there's a Republican who does something that I think makes sense, I'll say, hey, look, that makes sense. Rand Paul, for example, oftentimes proposes a bill that says, hey, let's not keep arming Saudi Arabia. So you give credit where credit is due. You don't go, I'm against him because he's a Republican, so I don't like him. That's stupid. That's just rank, rotten, disgusting partisanship, and it's what so many people hate about politics. But Eric Bolling, he's probably the worst example, is just chugging that partisan Kool-Aid. I've never seen such low-level, inaccurate content from anybody. So let's dive into it. First of all, I love his segment because it just drips with smug condescension. As, you know, he's part of the crowd that says, liberals are smug and condescending. You do a segment called Wake Up America as if you have like all the... I have the truth that I must share with everybody. I figured it all out, everybody. Wake up. Here I, Eric Bolling, am to bequeath my knowledge on you. Like, what do you think? You're fucking political Socrates? Oh, what a loser. So, wake up, America, he starts. Then he goes, Trump's popular with real Americans. Understand something. There's not a single poll out there right now. Not a single one, doesn't matter how far right you travel on the spectrum with the polling organizations. There's not a single one where Trump has a majority favorability right now. Not a single one. So what do you do when the facts are against you in that? Just skew it. So what do you say? Trump is popular with real Americans. With real Americans. So in other words, the only Americans that count are the ones that say Trump is popular. Doesn't matter that it's fucking 30%. That doesn't matter. Doesn't matter that unfavorability is 61% now. Doesn't matter. The ones who say they don't like him don't count because they're not real Americans. The ones who do like him, they're the only ones that count. So you go, Trump is popular with real Americans. Stop listening to the polls and the numbers. Wait, what? But how else are you supposed to measure if a president is liked or disliked? You have to go to the numbers in the polls. No, don't listen to that. Listen to my fucking gut when I say I think Trump is good because I like Trump. So even though it's a tiny minority of people who still support him, I'll just say those are the only ones that count because they're the real Americans. Man, it must feel great to pat yourself on the back when you win these debates in your fucking head simply by dismissing the people who disagree with you. I mean, how fucking hilarious is that? Write off everybody who disagrees with me, they don't count. The only ones who count are the ones who agree with me, and then look at that. Among the people who agree with me and like Trump, Trump is really liked. Wow, Eric, fucking genius you are. And then we get into just the preposterous shit about their records. So, first, race riots. What the fuck?
Yeah, under Obama, there were some race riots.
Okay, but why does that, do those have anything to do with Obama himself? Well, no, it was people in situations where, for example, officers would kill unarmed black people, and then people would say, fuck this, and they'd go out on the street. And what does Eric Bolling do? Don't blame, I don't know, the cops who killed the unarmed black people? No. You go direct, Obama, race riots, gross, Obama's fucking Obama.
Have you seen race riots recently under Trump?
Yes. So everything, every non-riot that happens is because people are going, you know, we would riot today, but fucking President Trump, man, we gotta stop because of Trump. It's just stacks the deck in every way, just lumps things he likes into the category of thanks, Trump. And anything he doesn't like, fucking Obama. And then, okay, ISIS, he said, is just about defeated. Could I get a definition of what that even means? Just about defeated. So how many are there? What areas do they still control? Where did they lose? Now, it actually is true that they lost, I think, in Mosul recently, but that had nothing to do with the U.S. That was 100% the Iraqi army. In fact, we did a segment when that happened where we came out here and said, see, America, get the fuck out of the way. Let the people in the region take care of their own goddamn problems, and we don't have to waste money and resources and American lives anymore. Let's mind our own goddamn business. So he's given Trump credit for something that had nothing to do with Trump. Nothing. And ISIS still has Raqqa. It's not like ISIS is totally gone. If it was Obama in office right now, he would say, fucking Obama, we're still losing to ISIS. See, ISIS still has Raqqa. But since it's under Trump, he goes, ISIS is almost totally defeated, except that they still have Raqqa, which is their de facto capital. But ISIS is pretty much defeated. So again, you just fucking bias everything in whatever direction that you want to just make the point you want to make. But it's like he's not even fucking trying, because anybody with even a bare minimal understanding of the facts goes, oh, this guy is so full of shit. And then my favorite part. Obama presided over 8 years of economic malaise. Okay, this is how you know you're dealing with people who have zero interest in reality. Because Obama, so yes, his economy had many problems. You had rising income inequality. Higher paying jobs were replaced with lower paying jobs after the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. So this isn't me doing a robust defense of President Obama's economic record. I just want to be clear about that. But yes, it is the case that under Obama, there was the net creation of over 12 million private sector jobs. He inherited an economy that was losing 800,000 jobs a month. He created over 12 million. That's what happened under him. So when you say Obama, 8 years of economic malaise, that's just preposterous. That's preposterous. Under George W. Bush, he had a net loss in his time in office of like 600,000 jobs. He lost jobs in office. Obama added 12 million. And what's Eric Bolling's genius conclusion? Obama economic malaise. Now, furthermore, I don't think the stock market is a good indicator of the health of the middle class and the country in general. But having said that, the Republicans do think it is. That's why they always talk about it under Trump. Oh, the stock market is doing great. The stock market more than doubled under Obama. So if you're going to use that as an indicator, stock market is doing well. Well, then you have to say under Obama, wow, he did a great job. It doubled. It fucking doubled. So see, just rank partisanship. He's playing for a team. That's what he's doing. That's all he's doing. So skew everything. I don't care. Millions of jobs created under Obama, don't care. Economic malaise. Doubled the stock market, don't care. Economic malaise. Obama sucked with the economy, Trump's good with the economy. Eric, I don't know, because you might be too stupid to realize how much of a dim bulb you are, but I think it might be the case that on some level you realize that you're just a pathetic partisan hack. And hopefully maybe somebody will show you this segment and you'll bear to watch criticism of you for 10 minutes or whatever the fuck it's been. And then, you know, you'll realize, wow, maybe I need to stop. But I won't hold my breath for that. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we got John McCain going after Trump again, but in a weird way. We'll discuss that. Then we have Jim Justice, the Democratic governor of West Virginia, with a big announcement the other day. So we're going to talk about that and some of the lessons of it and more. All right, stay right there, everybody. We will be right back.
so I'm gonna drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm
son
on
of a bitch.
The nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on
all right, everybody, we are back.
The left. God, please protect me if this
now.
Cause I can cook a kilo by my
cat. Here we go, mofos. Here we go, go, go. All right, President Trump and his new top adversary, John McCain. But let's get into the specifics of this disagreement. So President Trump mentioned recently how he's considering firing the top general in Afghanistan because he says, oh, we're losing the war, sad. And John McCain, you know, he's been getting quite a reputation recently as somebody who's an anti-Trump Republican, so obviously in the minds of many people that makes him respectable. So McCain didn't take kindly to the fact that Trump was floating the idea of firing the top general in Afghanistan. So this here is from CNN. Republican Senator John McCain slammed President Donald Trump on Thursday amid reports that Trump is weighing firing General John Nicholson, the top U.S. military commander in Afghanistan. General John Nicholson has served our country with honor and distinction for 35 years. He has earned the trust and admiration of those he has served with, and he has earned my full confidence, McCain said in a statement. Our commanders-in-chief, not our commanders in the field, are responsible for this failure, he added, referring to Trump and former President Barack Obama. I urge the president to resolve the differences within his administration as soon as possible and decide on a policy and strategy that can achieve our national security interests in Afghanistan and the region. Okay, so do you get John McCain's objection here? Now, again, this to me, this is just another key example of disagreeing with Trump in the worst way possible. So there's a million things to legitimately attack him on. He's fucking Donald Trump. But here he says, okay, we need to change the leadership in Afghanistan because we've been there fucking 16 years and what's going on? You know? Now, Trump's already horrible on this issue because he said during the campaign that he wants to get out of Afghanistan. Well, now he's in there and apparently he's not even really considering getting out anymore. He's talking about just changing the general. But McCain chimes in and goes, oh, how dare you? Just because we've been there 16 years and wasted trillions of dollars and this guy's been in charge for a while now doesn't mean that, you know, he's the one to blame. I think he's doing a great job. If he's doing a great job, what's a bad job? What's a bad job? We're there. There's no end in sight. There's no even defined goals as to what we're trying to do. Wasted trillions of dollars. Americans are dying. Afghanistan civilians are dying. So what's a bad job then, John? But that's the point. It's like, so this is the realm of debate we're having. This is the spectrum that's allowed. You're allowed to be, you know, hey, a little radical and say, maybe we should change leadership in Afghanistan, but obviously stay there because leaving would be crazy. Duh. And the other end of the spectrum, the further right wing of the spectrum, says, well, no, we're going to stay there, but we're going to leave the leadership as is. Do Americans realize how crazy this makes us look to the rest of the world? Afghanistan is called the graveyard of empires. Why is it called that? Oh, gee, I wonder. Wasting all of our time and money, resources, lives, gone there. Multi-trillion dollar war. Again, there's no even definition of success. That's how you know this is all a ruse, man. Is that, ask anybody. If you can find anybody who still supports the Afghanistan war among regular people, which you won't, ask them, hey, what's the definition of victory? They won't even be able to tell you. They won't even be able to tell you. I don't know. We got to stop Al-Qaeda. Okay, Al-Qaeda's gone in Afghanistan. They're no longer there. And at their peak, they had literally about 100 people in Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Well, then, but we had the Taliban housed them. Okay, but they didn't attack us, the Taliban. They're horrible. They're terrible. But they're a threat to people in their own region. They're not a threat to us. What, are they going to attack fucking Nebraska? It's not going to happen.
Yeah, but you got to stop them because Sharia law. Yeah, but okay, Saudi Arabia is our top ally. They have Sharia. Not only are we not going to war with them, we shouldn't, by the way, but we're encouraging them and giving them weapons and money, and they're one of our top allies. So it's obviously not about Sharia, but human rights and democracy. Again, I just told you, Saudi Arabia is our top ally. They don't have human rights and democracy and freedom there. So what's it about? What's it about? Well, in Iraq, we know oil was a big motivation. We know the military-industrial complex likes war for the sake of war because they make a whole lot of fucking money out of war. Keep the system going. You know, Eisenhower warned about this. So it's not just some far-left conspiracy. No, Republican presidents were like, beware of the military-industrial complex. People get rich from going to war. So you have that. You have geopolitical dominance is a gigantic aspect of this, of course. When you're the world's sole superpower, you want to stay the world's sole superpower. So you make unsavory business alliances, and you try to jack natural resources. I mean, in the case of Afghanistan, there's tremendous mineral wealth there. You know, there's also the opium crop is a huge thing there. So, and the argument of, well, seriously, we have to stop the Taliban, though. They already control 40% of the country, and we've been there 16 years. Seems to me like it ain't getting better, it's getting worse. And then furthermore, whenever you pull out, what do you think is going to happen? They'll go, yes, that's when the Taliban will take over more territory. Yes, but whenever you pull out, that's going to happen. Whether you do it now, whether you do it in 10 years, whether you do it in 100 years. They ain't going anywhere, son. It ain't happening. So it's just a waste of time, money, and resources, and this is the debate that we're having. Resistance, John McCain here, is like, how dare Donald Trump? He's not saying, how dare Donald Trump even consider still being in Afghanistan, because what the fuck are we doing? He's saying, how dare Donald Trump? Don't fire the current general. Keep him there because he's doing a splendid job, even though we've been there all these years with fucking dick to show for it. So, and Democrats, where are you? There's only one Democrat I know who's made the case to get out of Afghanistan. One. Justice Democrat Ro Khanna. I haven't heard any others make a peep. Even Bernie. I haven't heard Bernie make a peep about this. What are we just all grandfather in a fucking war? Like, there are people, we know many people who've been born and never not been at war in the United States. Think about that. You know, do you have a fucking nephew or something who's 15 years old? Their entire life, we've been at war in Afghanistan. It's just like, well, yeah, that's what we do. We just wage wars. Whatevs. That's not normal, man. That's not fucking normal. Get out. We're not getting anything from it. It's a waste of time, money, resources, effort, lives. And it just breeds further anti-Americanism all around the world on top of that. So we have to stop this. We have to get out. We have to get out now. According to a poll from 2013, all the way back then, only 17% of people still wanted to be there. So is that how disconnected our government is? That, you know, when 17% of people support a policy, they're just like, yeah, fuck. Yeah, we're going to go with that 17%. The rest of them can blow us. We don't give a shit. No, we have to force them to be accountable. We need Democrats to stand up on this issue and fight. And by the way, there's a winning issue, but the Democrats never touch it. Okay, now we move on to Jim Justice. I have a video for this. Yes, I do. Jim Justice, the Democratic governor of West Virginia, made a big announcement at a Trump rally last night. Watch this.
Let me just say this to you as bluntly as I can say it. West Virginia, at the altar, when we had it done, like it or not like it, but the Democrats walked away from me. Now,
I
Today, I will tell you with lots of prayers and lots of thinking. Today, I tell you as West Virginians, I can't help you anymore being a Democrat governor. So tomorrow, I will be changing my registration to Republican. As a coach, I would tell you it's time to run another play. I would also tell you this, and pay please close attention to this. My mom and dad were staunch lovers of Ronald Reagan, staunch Republicans. My mom and dad are no question in my mind in heaven right now, and they're both saying the same thing, but my mom is saying it more profoundly, and that is she's saying, Jimmy, it's about damn time you came to your senses.
Oh, that's so stupid. No, nobody's looking down on you from fucking pixie land in sky. Doesn't exist. Grow up. He goes on to say, by the way, that Trump makes regular people feel good about being regular people. But he's with the common man, Donald Trump. Except you're not a regular person. You're a coal baron billionaire. That guy, you just heard Jim Justice. He's a coal baron billionaire. So when you're talking about regular people, we, makes us feel, who's this we? Who's us? You're not them. You're just not. Stop pretending like you are. I'm a woke billionaire in touch with the common man. I'm just a working man, let me tell you. No, you're not. And Democrats supported this guy, man. Democrats, he won as a Democrat in West Virginia. But see, this is the problem. When you have your party is just the other party light, you're taking risks now, aren't you? This motherfucker just flipped on you, didn't he? Because he already kind of agreed with the Republicans anyway. This is why you have to have people who actually stand for an opposite vision. Because guys like this, look, man, they might win a race or two, and they might do okay in the short run, but it's a fluke. In the long run, the Republican light characters, the corporate Democrats, the conservative Democrats, they get wiped out. Look at what happened with Mark Pryor, got destroyed because he ran as Republican light. Look at what happened with Alison Lundergan Grimes, got destroyed because she ran as Republican light. You need to give people something to vote for, Democrats. You need to give people an opposite vision of the other party, and you have to believe in that vision. But that's the thing, is that the Democratic Party now, when all you have is corporatism, neoliberalism, and identity politics, you make it so that people can portray themselves as, like, keeping it real to leave the party. Like, oh, yeah, these guys are so out of touch that I'm going to go be with the Republicans, who he thinks are more in touch. What does that say about the Democrats? When this is like a big moment that he thought about. Like, yeah, I'm going to be with the Republicans because they're obviously more in touch. What? So you have populist leftism is the answer. This is why we're doing Justice Democrats. Bernie Sanders is the most popular politician in the country. Most popular politician in the country by far. What does he stand for? Medicare for all, free college, making the minimum wage a living wage, ending the wars, doing a new deal to rebuild our infrastructure. He actually cares about making the United States a thriving social democracy and giving people equal opportunity. This is what he cares about, and this is what he fights for. The other Democrats are careerists and narcissists and corporatists, and they get too caught up in identity politics and, you know, cliches. So maybe it's not a good strategy to run candidates who are so conservative that they'll flip on you after they get elected. Maybe that's not a good idea. And for people to say, yeah, but in West Virginia, you're never going to get a populist elected. First of all, Bernie destroyed in the primary in those states. But you could say, okay, well, understand that he's against Hillary, so that doesn't mean much. I agree. But what does mean a lot? He gets Trump voters to give him standing ovations when he goes and gets town halls in West Virginia and Kentucky and places like that, because he's making a case on the issues, on things they agree with. So when you can get a room full of Trump voters to cheer Medicare for All and free college, I think you're onto something. That's why we need candidates in the mold of Bernie. JusticeDemocrats.com, man. JusticeDemocrats.com. You don't think Joe Manchin has thought about this too? Hey, maybe I'll switch parties. He's definitely thought about it. He's voted more with Trump than with Bernie. I can't believe Dems supported this guy, man. Oh, he's better than the other guy. Oh. How about now? How do you feel now? Does he feel good now? Is he on your team now? He's literally not on your team. He told you to go fuck yourself. Oh, man. But look, at the end of the day, just a cold, barren billionaire going home to the Republican Party. I mean, that's what this is. But the Democrats, if you want to win, and if you want to be serious, you run people who are populist left, because the populist left is the only way to defeat the fake populist right. That's important. What's Trump? Fake populist on the right. That's what he is. Jim Justice, apparently the same thing. Fake populist on the right. What's the way to defeat them? The actual populist left. Okay, let's do one more, then we'll take our final break. Eight Democratic senators introduced a Medicare buy-in bill where you can opt in at age 55. So the people who co-sponsored it: Sherrod Brown, Tammy Baldwin, Sheldon Whitehouse, Patrick Leahy, Jeff Merkley, Jack Reed, and Al Franken. And this is an interesting piece of legislation for a variety of reasons. I mean, so let's be as specific as possible when it comes to this bill. Is it better than what we have now? Yes. Is it the end-all, be-all, and the answer? No. You know what I thought of when I was reading about this bill? The brain meme that's super popular now on Twitter and probably elsewhere too. I don't usually use other social media outlets, so I don't know if it's popular on whatever fucking Instagram or Facebook, but the brain meme is where, like, you see, like, the little peanut brain in the head, and then it gets a little bigger and a little brighter, and then a little bigger and a little brighter, and then at the end it's like, you know, the whole person's glowing, like, oh. So I thought about that, and you have Trump Care is like the peanut brain that's not glowing. The slightly bigger brain that's glowing a little bit is Obamacare. Then comes Medicare buy-in. Then comes public option. Then comes Medicare for All. So it's like the Democrats here, they're getting slapped in the face right now with reality. The reality being, holy fuck, Hillary Clinton lost to Donald goddamn Trump. That's the reality. They go, wow. We must suck so bad that we lost to Donald Trump, 60% unfavorability rating, grab him by the pussy, reality star clown, yada yada. So when that's the case, what do you do? Well, a lot of Democrats have just doubled down on their shittiness, thinking, well, maybe if we run further right, we'll do better. Those, they're so far gone as to be ridiculous, and they need to be primaried and lose. But then there's another group there that, like, semi gets it. They're like, shit, okay. This ain't going to work, the old direction. We got to move a little bit to the left. Who's in that group? I just told you. Sherrod Brown, Tammy Baldwin, Sheldon Whitehouse, Patrick Leahy, Jeff Merkley, Jack Reed, Al Franken. But they're not the ones who fully get it. The ones who fully get it, of course, people like Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna, who go, no, 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 you motherfuckers with your half measures, you're still not getting it. Medicare for all, bitch, that's the answer. You want to get 61% of Americans want it right now. That's what the polls show. And you're going to, okay, let's, like, tiptoe in the right direction, and maybe we'll, like, defend Obamacare, but also we'll go, like, a half a step further and maybe do a Medicare buy-in at age 55 and then make it better, and then we'll get the progressives to vote for us. And blah, blah.
What about 54? What about 53? What if you're 49? Those people don't have high premiums? Those people aren't getting price gouged by the for-profit health insurance companies? Yes, they are. Yes, they are. So the answer is Medicare for all. Stop with the fucking half measures. Obamacare itself was a half measure. And well, guess what? What happened? People are going, oh, fuck, oh, God, okay. I guess, thank you, maybe. But then you open the door with your shitty half measures, have the opposition party win, and they ran on Trump Care. Granted, they lost, thank God, because Trump Care was way worse. But this isn't a permanent solution. People are not that happy with it. Sometimes it pulls a little over 50%, sometimes it's under 50%. So you need to do more, and a Medicare buy-in is just the first step. You got to go all the way, man. You got to go Medicare for all. So, I mean, this is another one of those instances where you say, just like we did with Cory Booker the other day with his Decriminalized Marijuana Act. Okay, good. Thank you. It's a step in the right direction. But the answer is legalizing, taxing, and regulating marijuana on a federal level, not just decriminalizing and incentivizing the states to legalize. So with these fucking, like, they inch in the right direction, the Democrats, but the answer is to go all the way and argue for it up front, because that's how you garner the support and that's how you win. But, you know, maybe in a weird way they're being honest, though, because they're saying, we're not for that. We're not for Medicare for all. We're not. We're for a Medicare buy-in. But that's the problem, is that it's harder to garner, you know, support and to get these giant rallies and people anxious to vote for you when you do this. You know, it's like when Schumer the other week wanted to do premium stability and market stabilization. Yeah, try that at a rally. All right, who's with us on premium stability and market stabilization? Yeah. Everyone would be like, what the fuck? But Medicare for all, people go, yeah, because they get that. Medicare buy-in, again, it's the brain that's starting to glow, but not that great because you're not going all the way. So step in the right direction, but you got to go all the way, man. Medicare for all should have support of every Democratic senator. Every Democratic senator, every Democrat in the House. Now, because of you guys, we got more than half the Democrats in the House now. That's because of you, because of the work from National Nurses United, Brand New Congress, and Justice Democrats. So sign our petition on that, justicedemocrats.com/single-payer. Let's keep pushing them to the right position. And by the way, don't think that this doesn't have something to do with that, too. That you pushing politicians endlessly, that they're going, shit, I better do something or else my ass might lose. So keep pushing, man. JusticeDemocrats.com/single-payer. Keep signing that petition, because the more names are on that petition, the more higher the number is, the more power we have, the more we get to throw our weight around, and the more we get to make demands of our politicians. It should be easier than that. A representative should represent us. Should just be a given. But no, sometimes they represent the donors, and you got to slap them back to reality and say, look, okay, fine, take your donor money, but when you lose, it's going to be because we didn't show up to vote for you, the grassroots. So you do our bidding or else. That's what this is about. JusticeDemocrats.com/single-payer. And by the way, JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Go there and donate to our candidates, because they're at a permanent financial disadvantage because we don't take corporate money and PAC money, so we need you. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. And let's stop with the bullshit half measures and get candidates who unapologetically support Medicare for all, not just a buy-in. So let's take our final break. When we come back, Wall Street Journal has an article that unmasks Monsanto. And then, what percentage of Americans support our current marijuana laws? That is an interesting, interesting number. All right, stay right there, guys.
Hello.
so I'm gonna grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gonna grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
All right, all right, people, we're back.
The Wall Street Journal has an article that unmasks some of the dirty practices of Monsanto. Look at this. An escalating legal battle between Monsanto and a plaintiff's law firm offers an unusual look inside how the world's largest seed company defended a controversial herbicide. As part of a nearly two-year court dispute, the law firm this week released hundreds of pages of Monsanto employee emails and company documents concerning glyphosate, a herbicide that has drawn new scrutiny over its alleged potential to cause cancer. The emails show Monsanto's efforts to marshal scientists in defense of its product and combat research at odds with its own. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the European Chemicals Agency have said glyphosate isn't likely to cause cancer. Brent Wissner, a partner with the plaintiff's law firm, said the documents show pretty clearly that Monsanto has colluded or engaged in very close relationships with EPA officials and has ghost-written material and then cited the material as though it were authoritative. Wow. The law firm said it has supplied the documents to regulators in the U.S. and Europe to inform future decisions regarding glyphosate. The plaintiffs are seeking wrongful death and punitive damages from Monsanto. Mr. Wissner said that his firm had earlier challenged the confidentiality of each set of Monsanto documents the firm released, and that Monsanto didn't file legal objections. The debate over safety escalated in 2015 after the International Agency for Research on Cancer, an agency of the World Health Organization, classified glyphosate as likely having the potential to cause cancer. Okay, so let me explain what all that means. When you have the EPA and the European equivalent, European Chemicals Agency, saying, no, this doesn't look like it's likely to cause cancer. Interesting phrasing there. Doesn't look like it's likely to cause cancer. Why wouldn't you say it doesn't look like it causes cancer? Those look like it's likely to cause cancer. So maybe there's a little bit of wiggle room there. Maybe yes, but who are we? What do we know? I don't know. You're the EPA and the fucking equivalent, the European Chemicals Agency. So maybe you should know what the fuck you're talking about. But what's being alleged in this lawsuit from people who had cancer and worked directly with this shit, some of them who were working on the case with them died, and other people are still sick working on the case. So think about that. People working directly with this shit die young from different types of cancer. They go, hey, man, I think this stuff causes cancer. And Monsanto's like, no, you can't prove it. And then they have these emails that show, really? Then why are you working closely with the EPA? And why are you doing science for hire and working closely with the European Chemical Agency and basically fighting back in the PR realm against everybody that disagrees with you? So we've seen this playbook before. This is the climate change playbook. This is when ExxonMobil and Chevron and the big oil companies hire people to insist there's a debate about whether or not climate change is happening, and it's called by man's use of fossil fuels. They hire people who have academic credentials to basically be their bitch and say, oh, yeah, no, see, there's a question, because with climate change, there could be, like, sunspots, and there could be, like, natural variation in the temperature over time, and that means that there's a question, so don't fucking get on our ass about continuing to burn fossil fuels and make trillions of dollars. The same thing happened with the smoking industry, the tobacco industry. They hired people to say, well, does smoking cause cancer? I don't know. Some scientists say yes. I say no. So there's still a question. There's still a debate. Let's discuss it. Let's keep discussing it, but don't do any policy changes. So you see that trick? As long as they insist there's still a debate, they win. So in other words, they don't have to win the debate. They just have to insist that there still is a debate, and then you drag your feet in the policy realm, and that's all they want. That's all they wanted with smoking. That's all they want with climate change. That's all Monsanto wants with glyphosate. Roundup. Is it cancer cause? I don't know. I mean, we have scientists that say no. Sure, there are other ones that say yes, but we have ones that say no. And look, the EPA says no. But wait, didn't you just buy them out, basically? Didn't you, curry favor with them? Well, yeah, but that doesn't matter. EPA is on our side. Well, then why is it that when people finally conducted some research who were not financially tied to you, namely the World Health Organization, they said, actually, it looks like this probably does cause cancer. Why is that? So you buy the science that fits your economic agenda, that fits your profit margin. We've seen this trick so many times, and then good, innocent people get hurt, get sick, die, and they go, hey, man, we would like to, you know, get the facts out there about this and maybe get some punitive damages here. People go, oh, how dare you question the status quo and how things are working. No, these people are heroes, man. So if you don't trust Monsanto, I think you're correct. Okay. All right, next. We go to the marijuana legalization poll. This is special. New poll released this week on legalizing marijuana, and there's a hilarious number buried in the results. So let's take a look here. Nearly half of Americans support legalizing marijuana for recreational use, and a strong majority believe it should at least be available for medical reasons, according to a new poll. Now, let me just pause there real fast to point out that, so the number's 49%, but, you know, fewer people say it shouldn't be legal, so it's over water still. But this is actually low in terms of recent results, because we've seen 58% of people supporting marijuana legalization. We've seen as high as 60% of people supporting marijuana legalization now. So this is actually an outlier on the side that leans against medical marijuana legalization. This is as bad as I've seen the number in favor. But there's another number hidden in here that is quite telling and is more in line with some of the other polling data we've gotten on this issue. So let's continue. The latest Harvard-Harris poll survey found that 49% of Americans polled believe marijuana should be legalized for both medical and personal use. 37% say it should be legalized solely for medicinal purposes, meaning that 86% of respondents support legalizing the plant in some form. Here it is, guys. Only 14% say marijuana should be illegal. So in other words, those are the people who say it shouldn't be legal for medical reasons, it shouldn't be legal for recreational reasons, it should just be totally illegal. Only 14% of Americans are in that group. In the words of Mortal Kombat, flawless victory. Because here's the deal. According to the federal laws in the United States of America, that's the case. The laws in the United States of America, the federal laws, make it so that marijuana is illegal across the board. It's a Schedule I drug, which means there aren't even medicinal purposes for it. So all these states, okay, some states legalize recreational marijuana. California, Colorado, Washington, so on and so forth. There's even more states that have medical marijuana. Okay, but you think, well, yeah, so that's solid, right? That's set, that's law. Yes and no. Yes in that it's law in the state. No in that it's not federal law. The federal government does not recognize that. And that's only allowed to continue because the federal government has been more hands-off. But they could decide tomorrow, and they might under Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, they could decide tomorrow, shut it all down. And they have every legal right to do so. If you think that in a court of law, Colorado or California's claim of, hey, why is the federal government coming in here and shutting down these law-abiding pot stores that are following all the state laws and doing the right thing and they're upstanding citizens? If you think that the state would win in the court case, you're wrong. The federal government would win every time, 10 out of 10 times, because federal law overrides state law. That's the supremacy clause of the Constitution. And the federal law is marijuana is illegal for recreational purposes. It's illegal for medicinal purposes. So it is just flat out illegal. So the law in the United States, only 14% of Americans say, yeah, we have it right at a federal level in the United States. Gee, you think maybe it's time to change the law when 14% of Americans agree with it? Man, 86% disagree with our laws on marijuana in the U.S. I'm never not amazed by how disconnected the government is from what the people want. 80% of Americans want to raise the minimum wage. Not only are they not doing it right now, it's not even, they're not even fucking discussing it. I'm discussing it. Maybe get Bernie Sanders every now and then, maybe Elizabeth Warren, they bring it up, but in the Republican Congress, no way it's getting anywhere. But 80% of Americans want it. Even a majority of Republicans want it. Nothing. Remember back during the gun debate? 91% of Americans, including a majority of Republicans and a majority of NRA members, said, yeah, we need a universal background check on gun purchases. No excuses. No exemptions. That's it. Universal. Couldn't get that through. And the list goes on and on. Only 17% of Americans still want to be in Afghanistan, but we're still in Afghanistan. So this is, oh my God, man. In so many ways, the government just slaps you across the face. And then they wonder, hey, why does Congress only have a, you know, 16% approval rating? It goes between 9% and 21% normally. Why is our approval rating consistently in the teens and very bad? Because you're not doing anything that the people want, and you're representing your corporate donors, too. And that has a lot to do with this, man. It really does. Because who doesn't want legal marijuana? The DEA, for example. I know they're not corporate donors, but those are people within the government in a bureaucracy whose jobs depend on marijuana continuing to be illegal. So they hate this. They're lobbying against it. Big Pharma is lobbying against it because they view it as their competition. The alcohol and tobacco companies are lobbying against it because they view it as their competition. And the will of the American people is just ignored. Not anymore. We have to fight back. And by the way, Justice Democrats, they're in favor of ending the drug war immediately. So justicedemocrats.com/platform if you want to see what they're about, what we're about, and justicedemocrats.com/fight to support our candidates. Okay. Okay, here we go. Got another interesting poll for you. Here's some interesting new poll results that might shock some people. U.S. Muslims more accepting of homosexuality than white evangelicals. A recent survey by the Pew Research Center found a sizable shift in the views of American Muslims when it comes to homosexuality and found them to be more accepting of it than white evangelicals. In a survey conducted between January and May, 52% of U.S. Muslims said homosexuality should be accepted by society, an increase of 25 percentage points since 2007. Comparatively, only 34% of white evangelical Protestants said they believed homosexuality should be accepted, the smallest percentage of any group surveyed. Within the U.S. Muslim community, women and college graduates had the highest acceptance rate of homosexuality, both 63%, followed by less religious Muslims, 62%, and millennials, 60%. So that's those are some interesting poll results, and yeah, I have an explanation and a reason as to why this is the case. because generally speaking, secular liberalism beats fundamentalism. So when you give people the option, when you give people a taste of both choices, hey, here's what a fundamentalist lifestyle would be like, here's what a secular liberal lifestyle would be like, people go, shit, fuck that fundamentalism garbage. They say, give me the secular liberalism. Give me a taste of Americanism, American society. Give me the delicious fucking, but horrible for you, food. Get all the fast food and shit. Give me Hollywood and all the movies. Everybody likes to shit on, you know, movies and stuff, but the reality is we all watch them and we all like them. Give me the awesome TV shows, you know, whichever ones they may be, whether it be on HBO or AMC or whatever. Give me that. Give me the how we lead when it comes to music and entertainment and fashion and all that stuff. People get a taste of that, and I think there's something about that kind of stuff that is more innately appealing to people. Whereas when you tell people about a fundamentalist lifestyle, it's, okay, here are the rigid rules. You know, you're not allowed materialism, consumerism, experiencing the pleasures of this life for what they are. That's all frowned upon in a fundamentalist lifestyle. You're supposed to be rigid, by the book, pious, have no fun. So people look at those options and they go, yeah, I'm going to go in this direction because I like it more. And as a result of that, there are usually beliefs that go hand in hand with that. If you're enjoying all the pleasures of modern society and everything that America has to offer, people, I'm going to be more tolerant of people who are not like me. I'm going to be more open-minded and accepting, and I'm not going to have these crazy black and white categories of like gay, bad, or other religion, bad. It's more open-minded, pluralistic, tolerant society. And also, we do a good job in the U.S. of having a genuine melting pot where, you know, people come together. And yes, they're people of different ethnicities, different backgrounds, different faiths or non-faiths. And you mix everybody together and they just see people as people and you just, it is what it is. You just live with each other and like each other and all that. So, yeah, I always find it funny to me when people are like completely against any kind of immigration, particularly Muslim immigration, because, oh my God, they're fucking crazy, backwards, conservative, fundamentalist ideas. Until you get many of them in a different context, in which case they become 100% American. Like, okay, do you have faith in secular liberal ideas or not? If you really believe in pluralistic secular liberal society, well, then you should say, of course I want to accept refugees and Muslim immigrants and whoever, because I think they will conform to our beliefs and our ideas because I think our beliefs and our ideas are better. Only people who don't really have faith in secular liberalism say, oh, you got to keep the fundamentalists and you got to keep the Muslims away because they're conservative and they're going to drag us in that direction. Or if you really believe in our ideas and our ideas spread are really as inherently appealing as we claim, then no, they're going to come here and they're going to start acting like that. And this is evidence of that. Now, on the flip side, in white evangelical communities, they're very insular communities. They're not very pluralistic. They're not. There's not a diversity of opinion, thought, ethnicities, faiths. It's very insular. So you have people who are raised in that fundamentalist context, and they know nothing but that fundamentalist context. And in that context, you're going to have people who are like, yeah, I heard gays are bad, so gays are bad, and I'm against gays. But when you have American Muslims who are more spread out and who get influences from all different aspects of culture and are with all different people of different ethnicities, faiths, backgrounds, etc., they're more pluralistic, more open-minded, and then you get numbers like this. And then there's also one other aspect to this which I think is interesting, which is it could also be minority-to-minority acceptance. So in the U.S., obviously, American Muslims, that's less than 1% of the population, you know, Gay people, I don't know the total number, but 15-20% maybe of the population. That might be a little high, according to the official numbers, but whatever. It's still a minority, obviously. So you might have people recognize, like, hey, look, there's a chance that since we're a minority, we don't get accepted by mainstream society, the white evangelical mainstream society, if you will. So we're going to accept people who are different from the mainstream because we're different from the mainstream, and sometimes it could take a while to fit in. So you get an understanding of what it's like to be an outsider so you can accept people with differences. So that might be another aspect of this, but interesting poll results nonetheless. When you talk about conservative Muslim culture, fundamentalist Muslim culture, you're not really talking about the U.S. In the U.S., that's not a big issue, and the numbers prove that. Okay. Now, final story of the day real quick. So there's an interesting bill that was approved recently that I wanted to share with you guys. It's called Right to Try. And it's a bill that lets sick patients try unapproved treatments in order to try to cure themselves. It's like a last-ditch effort kind of bill. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because there's a clear upside, but then there's also a clear downside. So the upside is, look, when you have cancer, you have whatever it may be, a serious, serious disease, and you're very sick and nothing's working, and the doctors say you're out of options, and then you hear through the grapevine, hey, look, there's somebody, some pharmaceutical company out wherever who's developing this experimental treatment that might work, and here's how it works in theory, and if you want to give it a shot, hey, you can give it a shot. If you're that person, you're going to, 10 out of 10 times, you're saying, yeah, give me whatever. Anything that even if it has a 2% chance of working, that's 2% more that I didn't have yesterday. So that's part of it where you go, I don't know, man, it's hard to tell somebody you can't have it, and that's a giant upside. Here's the giant downside. The downside is this is going to be exploited by greedy big pharma companies. So when people are sick and they have no option, they have no choices, and their time is limited, you can come to them with anything, and even if there is literally a 0% chance it'll work, you could say, hey, this gives you a 1% chance, and then sell it to them for a tremendous amount of money and rip them off right before they die. And if you don't think that has a solid chance of happening, then you really don't know human nature very well. So, you know, you could be a big pharma company basically selling sugar pills to people, and saying, yeah, here, this is going to cure you in with your cancer, which has no other treatment, and this is a last-ditch effort. It's only like a 1% chance of curing, but hey, it's experimental treatment, right to try, right? So here, you can try it. And they're just ripping you off and taking your money and giving you false hope. So there's a clear upside and a clear downside. And it's not like, you know, somebody might say, well, wait, wouldn't the FDA regulate? Well, no. Why would the FDA regulate it if the whole point is right to try? So in other words, it doesn't matter what the fuck it is. It doesn't have to be a proven treatment. It's just you could try whatever because it's a last-ditch effort. So which way do you go on something like this, man? You're opening up the door to rampant big pharma abuse and price gouging of the most vulnerable people in society, people who are sick and on their deathbed, basically. But then on the flip side, yeah, maybe there are going to be some instances where you have an experimental treatment that's actually an experimental treatment that might actually fucking work, that if you don't have this right to try bill, you're blocking somebody from their last chance of maybe survival, which feels wrong also. So I don't know, man. This is a difficult legislation. This is something that has clear upsides but clear downsides too, so it's hard to really wrap your mind around which way to go. I think I lean in the direction of letting people try, but you have to go into it eyes wide open and understand that probably most of the time people are going to get fucking scammed. So you got to try your best to make sure people don't get scammed, but that's really not possible because if the whole point of the bill is a right to try, then you can never tell them no. You can never tell them, hey man, no, look, these people are known for scamming people. Because then they'll say, I don't give a fuck. I have a right to try. And if they're the only people who are offering me anything, well, then I'm going to go in that direction. So it's a difficult conversation, and it's a difficult bill, but I wanted to bring it up and share it with you guys and see what maybe some of you think, because it's tough. It's tough. Okay. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you, baby. I hope everybody enjoys their weekend. We will be back on Monday, of course. Peace out, skis.